Good evening, everybody. Tonight on Ham Nation, Route 66 reports in. Bob has a special anniversary. Smoke and Solder, Newsline, and so much more coming up next on Ham Nation. Stay tuned.
Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 471, September 16th, 2020. Bob begins his 65th year of his ham radio career.
Hi, everybody. It's Bob Heil, K9EID, and you are tuned to Ham Nation. I do hope that you're going to be here the whole hour or more. We never know because we have so much fun, but there's so much going on. Gordo is here. Gordon, you're doing good, and I guess you got some things happening from Costa Mesa, right?
Yeah, we're looking toward the International Space Station, but barely seeing it tonight for a visual because of all the smoke. And we just hope for the very best for those down south with Hurricane Sally coming ashore, Bob.
Okay, we are seeing some of that smoke out here in the Midwest, believe it or not. George, how are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, we're doing well here, Bob. The hurricane sort of turned east, so we've seen some wind here and clouds for a couple of days, but it really hadn't rained or anything like that. And Don is safe too. It, you know, it turned in time that it missed him, but I think the people down around the Alabama-Florida line are having a rough time still. A lot of flooding going on there. Tonight, I've got a smoke and solder for you. I've been spending my last 3 weekends making emergency trips to transmitter sites, so I shot a little tales from the transmitter while I was out at one of them this weekend.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing what you got going, as long as you don't have a bunch of snakes that you run into as you do that.
Good. Amanda, it's
been a while, and we have a very special guest from the West Coast, Bob Lanahan, and we'll get him in here in a minute, and he's going to tell us all about what they're doing in their club. Before we get into all of that, I got a couple of things I have to tell you about. First of all, how many of you like the music of Chuck Berry? I'm sure everybody does because he's been around forever. He's from the St. Louis area. But did you know that most all of the things he did, he didn't write? They were done by Jimmy Johnson. And Johnny Johnson. Johnny was amazing, and he played piano with him. Well, I want you guys and gals to check this out. Go to jjthemovie.com, and you'll see the whole deal, what's going on. They put together a documentary. A friend of mine here in St. Louis, Art Holliday, he'd been working 15 years on this thing, a documentary about Johnny Johnson. And you really want to go catch it up because it's fantastic. And they're going to have you'll see it when you go to that site. They're going to have a trivia, and it's going to be virtual this weekend. That's going to be really fun. So you want to check into some of that, and you'll see what's going on. I'm wearing my Route 66 shirt because it's Route 66 again. You know how I love that. And I want you to spend time finding some of the stations. And there are what you're looking at are two of the cards from Springfield. They just worked so hard. All these stations, they got a new one too. You remember he was on a couple weeks ago. So you want to check all that out because there's a lot of fun to be had working all of the stations. Well, before I get over to our guest, I want to tell you a little bit about what's going on with me tonight. Tonight's a very special night. 64 years ago, I got my amateur radio license. And I got about a minute of stuff I'm going to run through here and show you. 64, I can't believe it. I shouldn't be that old, Gordo, but that's another subject that's going to happen to me. But on this date in 1956, well, in the Wednesday, on the 19th, I got my amateur radio license. And boy, did I open up a whole life. I was taking organ lessons, and across the street was Walter Ashe Radio. And so I would go over there and visit them. And one of my high school chums got me into ham radio so I could go over and see what was going on. And I ended up with that. Harvey Wells, SX99, that was an REME converter because I was a technician. I was a technician for 17 years. I never listened below 50 megs. I didn't need to. And you'll see over in the left, I really hate that. I never had a good picture of that. That was my first homebrew. It's a little 2E26 rig on 6 meters. Of course, that's all AM at that time. And that was my first QSL card. Gordo, I bet you remember that. That's the card.
I do, and the 2E26s with the new Vistors. I remember them.
Yes, yes. This is from General Electric. They had these cards, and you could go in and get your free card. Of course, you had to fill them out, but I got others later. But that was my second rig. I had met up with K0DGE on the air on 6 meters. He was on single sideband. It took me 2 nights to figure him out. He was there every night. But he had one of the very first sideband transmitters on 6 meters. You'll see to the extreme left is his Central Electronics 10B. However, he had taught me, I asked him if he'd build me a sideband rig. No, I can't do that. But I'll teach you how, and he did. And there it started, my whole career of building. And we were one of the first 10 on single sideband. I built then a Johnson Kilowatt. That's a Johnson 6-2 Thunderbolt. So I was pretty mean on 6 meters. It was really too much fun, I got to tell you. And that was one of the antennas that I had. A whole story about that, but we'll get into that. Many of you might know it, but 128 elements on 2 meters. So I had way too much fun. But look where I am today. I'm still having fun with all of you. That's why we do this show, is to bring you all of the fun that Gordo and George and I, we all have fun, and we want you to share in it. That's the whole deal. Well, I have a real special guest tonight. Bob Lanahan is with us, and he's brought along some really interesting stories that we're going to bring to you. I guess that... Bob, you can tell us a little bit about the club. What is it, W6AGO? Is that right?
Well, actually, I'm a member of a number of clubs, and that's kind of the story I'm going to tell you, is what happened during this pandemic. And I've been so excited that I'm in ham radio. So that's the story I'm going to tell you, Bob, and it's a pleasure to be on the show.
Well, thank you. Well, we'll start out here, and you can run down some of these. We know you're going to talk about how you're handling the pandemic. So look at that guy. Go ahead.
That's right. I had to throw a little picture there. let's see. You should be on chart number 2. And I'm going to first start out with a little thank you. Then I'm going to tell you what I'm doing, some observations and highlights, and where I think we are with ham radio, and then maybe a little time for questions. Bob asked me to throw in a bunch of pictures, so I've got a lot of pictures in here. Bob, we can do picture review at the end, or we can blast through this. How would you like to go?
Yeah, we're going right through there, and we'll do those at the end.
Okay, very good. So chart 3. First is a thank you. And you got to know I'm tickled pink to be on Ham Nation. Really exciting. I've been watching you guys for years. here's the list of all the clubs that I'm associated with: an aerospace club in LA, a Hughes club in LA, the Valley Radio Club, which is where I'm at now, an El Segundo amateur radio group. We're supporting El Segundo with emergency comm if they need it, and a TRW club. So on to page four. The purpose is, ham radio has been a fun learning experience. I'm going to do some highlights of things that I've done, talk a little bit about how things have changed during the pandemic. And, you know, again, I'm going to recognize that working with all these energized, fun people is what makes ham radio so good. And there I've got a picture of Gordo when I met him at HamCom 2017 in SoCal. And there are a couple ESARG buddies with us. So on to page five. So one of the first projects I worked on when I joined ham radio was WinLink, the ability to use your laptop, your radio, to send messages. And I always thought that was pretty neat, kind of a alternate way to have pretty interesting communications. And next chart, page six. So that year when I figured out how to do that, I gathered 200 points for the Aerospace Ham Radio Club. I demoed it there at the ESARG van. And I also went out to another club on Sunday morning and got some points through that club. So just a few pictures there on the roof and of the van. Page seven. Next project that I got into pretty fortuitously was Echolink. We've got Echo Links on a few of our clubs, and Mike at the Hark Radio Club, or W6HA, we worked to put in, he did all the work. He put in the radio, the Echo Link system, but we built a briefing so that everybody would understand how to use Echo Link. On to page eight. So Echo Link, starting with the pandemic lockdown in March, I've used Echo Link every day, and that says 2 months. It's been 6 or 7 months since we had the lockdown. The only reason I get up in the morning is at 8 a.m. there's an aerospace emergency net, and we have 3 or 4 people that check in via Echolink, and probably about 10 people that check in over normal radio. Monday nights, I meet with my ESARG group. Wednesday, I meet with the Hughes Amateur Radio Club. And then I decided to move up north here with my girlfriend in Eugene, Oregon, and leave LA behind. And that's when I got acquainted to this new club.
Oh, no, so, you left it. Yeah, follow these, what you see on the screen here.
That's right. So one of the first things that happened is we started migrating our monthly meetings to Skype and Zoom, and that's what I have there. Aerospace and Hark went to Skype and Zoom. So on to page nine. So I got hooked with the Valley Radio Club with something I hadn't seen before. It's a lunchtime net. We call it the Darned Quarantine Net. And it was Friday at noon with 60 people. I mean, I was used to 6 or 8 folks when we had a net. So we checked in. And then Doc went around the group and asked everybody how they're doing and what's for lunch. And it was very interactive and very welcoming. And then I found out the club has a Monday night What Now, or Now What Net, for newbies. And Catherine organized that. It's meant to teach the newbies the ropes. It's informative, it's fun, it's low key, and folks are getting used to running a net and just talking. And of course, we have Elmer's there to help out. Then Tuesday night, we have a tech net. At least 30 or 40 folks join in. It's an hour to an hour and a half long. And we talk about everything everybody's interested in. So that, you know, again, it blew my socks off. And one of the things was my HT couldn't handle the RF noise. The squelch, I would have to turn the squelch to zero, and it's pretty painful listening to a net that way. So Echolink saved my bacon. And then one of the things I became familiar with was email reflectors. That's what the Valley Radio Club uses. And basically, you're sending a blind email to a club distribution. It's not quite a bulletin board. It's just email, but it's pretty neat. And they have, I would say, a dozen specialty lists, like fox hunts, digital radio, emergency comm, packets, QRP, SATCOM, et cetera. On the page. Go ahead, Bob.
I want to run through some of these pictures. Some of these are really great and just narrate them as I get through it here. We're looking at the clock. This is really cool, this little bunny hunt thing. This is cool. What's going on?
Yep. So we've had at least 4 bunny hunts in the last 2 months. I don't have my directional antenna, so I just use the body shielding method where you use your body to figure out where the transmitter is.
Well, and I like it because you actually have a bunny.
Yes, we do. 2 bunnies. See top left, bottom right?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, this is another great picture. Let's see. I recognize that guy from the ARRL. Bob Allison.
Very good. Yep, and he was doing RF spectrum output on our radios.
Nice antenna.
Yep, we have a mobile antenna in the Heart Club, and it goes everywhere and does everything. We're pretty proud of it.
Wonderful. Look at that. My.
Yep. And after we tear down from field day, we always take a picture in front of the antenna.
Well, of course. That's great.
Here we're nice. Grouped around Brian's satellite antenna.
Aha.
Tom there on the left made a mag loop antenna. Don's appreciating the simplicity.
Magnetic loops are great, aren't they? That's cool.
We had a lot of fun with that. The Valley Radio Club is doing social distance testing. That's a picture from up above.
Somebody's drone. That's neat.
And there's Brad on the left and Riley, who's tested. He's had 300 test sessions now. Pretty amazing, huh?
Wow. Wow. That's great.
Just a field day shot where everybody was social distancing for field day.
And there you go with Gordo again.
Yeah.
Well, you guys keep it going. What I really liked about all of it is that you keep everybody involved, and almost every night you have something going on, and I imagine they're all virtual. That's what it seems like, and that's what we have to do today, and that's kind of what we bring all your clubs on to tell us about what you're doing virtually, and it looks like you guys are doing a lot of things, so that's really great.
Yes, yeah, we're having an awful lot of fun. And, you know, we're digging into the new digital radio and the UHF hotspots. That's pretty big. We're going to be doing a remote controlled station so people can operate from home on a really nice rig. We've got people that do SOTA, and that's what you see there. That was before we went up and hiked a mountain.
That's great. Well, you guys have got it going on, and I appreciate you letting us know about some of the things that you're doing, and I hope that you continue to do that. Stay in touch with us if there are other things that we can bring to the guys here. And there's so much that we need to do, and it's all different than it has been for years, and you guys are on top of it, so that's really great. And hopefully we can get to come back out to a ham fest again on the West Coast, and we'll be able to see everybody in person again. But for now, we all do it virtually, and it works. So I appreciate you coming. Any other final comments that you might want to make about the club?
Well, one of the areas that I'm interested in still is you've got all these different means. You've got IO boards, you have Discord, you've Skype and Zoom, and I don't think we've reached our potential yet, and I suspect over the next few months we're going to continue understanding that environment and reaching out to everybody in the ways that make sense.
Absolutely, and that's the whole thing, is that it's a new deal for us, and it's paying off because the clubs are being even more lively. So we appreciate you letting us see what you guys are doing, and especially your testing. That's wonderful to do it with social distancing, and I'm really happy for you. So, hey, thanks for joining us tonight, and you please stay in touch with us, and we'll make things come again, and appreciate you being here, Bob. 7-3, my friend.
Thank you so much.
See you, Bob. Thanks so much.
Gordo, you got anything for Bob? You got anything for Bob, Gordo?
Just all the very best. Now, Bob, you're up in Oregon. Is that right? And do you have fires up there?
Oh, yes. We've got the worst air quality in the country right now. Off the charts at 500. But to be honest, it's getting a little better. I think it was 300 parts per million today.
Oh, wow. And our ham radio operators working with evacuation centers?
I'm sure there are. And there was an emergency net that we used to run. And basically, we're waiting to see if they need our help. And we're staying off the nets if the firefighters and other emergency folks need to use them.
Oh, that's great. Well, Bob, thank you so much for coming on board Ham Nation. And I remember those days of HamCon back in 2017, and we'll look forward to seeing more of those and you and your team shortly. 73, Bob.
73, Gordo.
Well, see you next round. Well, Gordo, I know you got a lot of important things to talk about, and mainly I know you've got some frequencies for us to stay away from, so let's hear all the things that's going on with these hurricane nets.
All right. Well, the hurricane net during the day, of course, is on 14.325. Nighttime, they're 75 meters, and I'm a little too far away to hear it well. 40 meters, anywhere from 7240 to 7260. But just listen around, because you may get a ham just out of nowhere asking for someone to pass health and welfare traffic. And that's where that ham is out of the internet, out of cell phone, out of almost everything other than ham radio. And you could be a real hero by taking the message and relaying it via phone or email up the line. And I always, when the person that he wants to give the message to answers the phone, I say, I'm an amateur radio operator with good news. And I always say that right off the bat so they don't keel over thinking, uh-oh. So that's what it's all about. Well, the good news is the amateur radio aboard the International Space Station is getting plenty of activity. So let's take a quick look and see where we are on week number 2 of the International Space Station carrying the crossband amateur radio repeater. So John, our board man for tonight, if you'll go ahead and bring up that first shot. And the frequencies again for receive are 437-800, and the transmit is 145.990. Both are FM, and it's important to remember that the 437 is high enough, 3 times higher than 2 meters, that you may need to compensate for Doppler shift. So go to 437-805 as the International Space Station is approaching you, and 800 when it's pretty much overhead, and as it's going away, 437.795, just drop down 5 kilohertz. You do not need to change your 2-meter frequency. It's 1/3 of the Doppler shift, and you can't change it by 1 kilohertz. Most radios are 5 kilohertz. So that's why we are using these two frequencies, and of course, FM to be able to get through. Now, here's a shot, and I warn you, folks, what you may hear may be disturbing. So put your hands over your kids' ears. Not really, but here's what happens when you have a shot approaching you, coming over populated areas. Right. right. Yep. You hardly heard a word. You couldn't hear your own echo because there were just so many stations trying. Well, people say, well, there's a problem with the repeater aboard. No, there's not a problem with the repeater. Talking to Rosalie White, K1STO, she has talked to her engineers going, no, everything is fine. The problem is there's just one uplink channel, and when so many hams transmit all at the same time during a pass that their antennas can see, it creates heterodynes, and there's so many hams calling at once that the heterodynes drop out the 67 hertz tone. So the repeater says, I don't hear anything, and clicks off until the stronger station comes on. So the recommendation is, on a pass that's going right overhead and one that's coming from a populated area, do a lot of listening. Do some recording and get the kids to listen that you're tuned in. Here on the West Coast, we actually have some visual passes, so it'll really be fun to get the kids involved. Now, a pass that is coming to you where there's nobody else going to be competing, such as an ocean pass like this, the communication should be a little bit more like this. And did you hear that ker-chunk? That means you made it through to the repeater. Now, aboard the space station is a 25-watt Kenwood transceiver, and you see it head down there on the right side. That is a very complex and space-certified power supply that delivers the correct voltage. And the best part about this whole package is the astronauts at the space station now have a way of charging their cell phones or some of their other media that take a USB. So they love that. And that is, of course, all ham radio operators supplied. Now, the antennas for the International Space Station, they actually have backups. So you're probably working through either the one on the left, the WA1, or backup WA2, but they can control as to which one. The one on the right-hand side is quite unique. It's a foot and a half long, and not only does it do 2 meters and 70 centimeters, but it can also do the 10-meter band as well. And each of the other antennas aboard the International Space Station for the cross-band repeater can do both the L and S bands as well. So it's multi-band. And here you see them putting up the antenna. This was the best shot I could get from space. Thanks, Rosalie, though. It's a great shot. And you can see that antenna. And normally they're on an antenna that is pointed down toward Earth. But as Rosalie's engineers will indicate, the polarity will slowly change. So for those of you with the elk or the arrow antennas, continuously rotate that antenna to find the best polarity. Well, many of you are using like 25-watt radios out in the open, and those 25-watt radios need a good little battery backup. And here is something from Marvin with Impulse Electronics. Now, you see him at all the ham radio shows before they all close down, the ham shows, that is. But believe me, Marvin and his wife are really putting together some great battery supplies for keeping your rigs on the air when you're out remote. This one caught my attention because it has everything from a cigarette lighter plug to some of the other more useful items. Inside, it's running on a BioNO lithium iron phosphate battery. And this I like. This comes from Roger at Wiredco, WIREDCO. It's like $15. It's not it's even less than that. And it measures your transceiver's amount of current. It measures how much it's been consuming over an hour's time, shows voltage, and it continuously changes, and it's in series, and it's just a great way, thanks, Roger, for finding out what's going on. for those that are handling disaster communications down in an evacuation center, you're going to find that many of those that had to leave their homes didn't have a chance to grab the battery charger. So this is a wonderful little device, part of the Impulse Electronics, and that's ImpulseElectronics.com. In the center is a USB connection, also a Type-C PD for other type of phone devices, that's a great way to keep everybody's handheld telephones recharged. The left jack there, of course, are twin outputs capable of about 30 amperes, and that's just on one set of the Andersons. And built into the little low-voltage supply is also a readout. That's not the readout of the USB, but rather the readout of the battery, the BioNO battery. And you'll be surprised. Lithium iron phosphate, unlike a wet cell or sealed lead acid, it just holds that voltage remarkably, no matter the amount of current that you're pulling. Now, this also comes from Impulse Electronics, and this is the, let me make sure, or is this from Roger? No, I think this is from Impulse. Yeah, this is from Impulse. It's called the Charger Doctor, and it registers on a USB the amount of current going into a person's cell phone or as the voltage that it's putting into it, about, the voltage for the USB. It either comes from Impulse Electronics or Roger at Wired Co. These kids have great devices. Oh, my goodness, it's a yellow Anderson. That means this is where the BioNO power solar panel would plug into, because when you plug into this particular jack, it's going to go not directly to the battery, and there's the BioNO battery inside this wonderful Max power box that keeps everything safe, and you can even put a rig in there as well or drive an outside rig. But if we take a close look, you'll see that there's also a PowerWorks, the company's voltage regulator, to ensure that we don't have anything pulling too much current. Now, this is the device that we use when we're out at a evacuation center, and it allows folks to come in and plug in, and it's got different types of plugs. And this comes from Roger at Wired Co., and who knows, probably Marvin at his setup will have this going as well. So ImpulseElectronics.com. Oh, there's the space station already coming over now on its first pass. The ImpulseElectronics.com or WiredCo.com, and you can see all these neat little accessories that you have. Oh, yeah. I want to thank Matt K0. Let me just turn that down. Hold on. There we go. Matt K0 LWC for the great amount of information he puts on his website, Kilo Zero Lima Whiskey Charlie, and Daniel KB0 TDW for thinking of me to mention this on Ham Nation, and Rosalie ARISS K1STO, also with the American Radio Relay League. She has been so helpful, and what she says is so true. If you're in a big populated area and the space station is headed your way, listen, don't even try with a 5-watt handheld, but if you're in an area or if it's 2 in the morning during a pass, you'll make it fine with a handheld, even on 1 watt with the small arrow antenna. Don Arnold, W6GPS, says his little Kenwood early in the morning was able to make it with just the long rubber duck antenna. So no problem with the repeater. It's doing just what it's supposed to in the crossband mode. The problem is just too many stations all transmitting up at once. So that's my space station story. You heard it in the background. We've got another pass coming over Southern California about an hour and a half from now. This one's going to be right overhead, and we're going to have the aero antenna, and we're going to see if we can actually get a signal through. Chance will be about 1%, but I'm going to give it a try anyway. But I'll have a lot of fun listening. So, George, how are you doing down there? And we sure hope that Hurricane Sally is not creating wind or weather that's adverse to your locale. George?
Well, not at my locale, Gordo. It turned to the east before it came on land. And we were initially thinking that, yeah, it would pass over our area here, but we ended up being on just outside of the storm. We've had the wind for 2-3 days now and the cloudiness, but that's all we got here. So we have done just fine here. The people over in Alabama and Florida and I guess maybe Georgia by now are having some issues. And there's one more resource I wanted to give for those who have been keeping up with the hurricane here. I wanted to track it. You know, if you can't receive a signal on HF, there's another net. It's the VOIP Hurricane Net. You can find that. Just do a search for it. And then you can listen over a number of resources, Echolink, D-Star, All-Star, I believe DRM, maybe several other modes. And that gives you one more resource. Now, it's not the same net you're going to hear on HF, but I believe the two are coordinating with each other. I'm not positive about that, but that's what we listen to here on the local repeater. So, we ended up okay. Even the transmitters have survived it so far. But then again, there's been no lightning, so a thunderstorm, yeah, that's going to give me probably more trouble than anything else around here. We're going to be back in just a moment because I got a couple of things to tell you about and a little smoke and solder. But first, here's a message from ICOM.
Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion as you have base station features and functionality at the tips of your fingers and a portable package covering HF 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at 1 kilo or just over 2 pounds. With RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz, 5-watt battery operation with BP272 or 10 watts with a 13.8-volt DC supply. Modes include single sideband, CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions, a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, and live band scope with waterfall, integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger, micro USB connector, Bluetooth, and wireless LAN, and there's a micro SD card slot. It comes standard with the HM243 speaker microphone, and it supports QRP and QRP operations. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 optional backpack with a special compartment for your IC705 and room for accessories for soda activations or just a day in the park. The IC705 has now received FCC certification and ICOM expects products to be shipping to dealers by the end of September. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information about this and all the great ICOM radios.
And just an update on the 705. It is in the United States now. They've received a huge shipment at ICOM America headquarters out in Washington, and they are staging them now, and they're shipping to dealers. So you'll be seeing those on the air here very soon in the U.S. If you'd like one of those, well, don't go away. I'm going to tell you about that in just a second, how you've got a chance to win one. But right now, I want to tell you about our weekly drawings for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. You can register to win at icomamerica.com/hamnation. When you register, you can also get the details on how you might win in the monthly drawing. Grand prize is a new radio each month. And for September, that is the ICOM IC2730A dual band dual watch mobile. It's got simultaneous VHF, UHF, VHF, VHF, or UHF, UHF receive. There's a large high contrast display for easy visibility. It's a rugged mill standard 810 construction radio, weather channel receive, and weather alerts built in. There's an optional Bluetooth mode available, or module available, and free downloadable programming software as well. If you're looking for a good dual band analog mobile dual watch, you want to check out the ICOM IC2730A. And you should go after this episode and each episode of Ham Nation to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register to win. And I just mentioned, if you would like to win an IC705, that has really been the talk of the town for a number of months now, because it was announced shortly before the pandemic, and they're just now getting in the U.S. and about to hit distribution. Well, there's a chance that you might win one. As a matter of fact, I got an email just this afternoon, and they have shipped one my direction. The IC705 should be arriving here next week, and we're going to give it away. You know, it's coming up on the 15th anniversary of AmateurLogic.tv next month, and we're going to be giving away on the October 16th episode. If you would like to register to win that, well, you can go to AmateurLogic.tv/contest. Get all the details right there. You could win that IC705, the great new hybrid radio. It's got base station radio features and performance and functions in a compact size. It's lightweight and portable. It's perfect for SOTA, POTA, or basically any on-air location. It does 10 watts with the external 13.8-volt power supply, or it does 5 watts with a It's 5 watts with the BP272 lithium ion battery pack. It's HF, 6 meters, 2 meters, 440, D-Star, DV, SSB, CW, AM, and FM mode. So it's an all-band, all-mode radio. In a QRP package, there's also an optional backpack that goes along with that. If you would like that, well, we're going to include it as well. The radio just fits in the very top there. It's ruggedly mounted in, so it cannot fall out of the pack, and you've got plenty of room for coax, antennas, basically anything else that you'd want a backpack when you're going to do some radio operating. So, thanks, ICOM, for that 705. I know everyone's been looking forward to it, and you could possibly win it. Now, also, you're going to need an antenna, so we've got an MFJ Big Ear antenna. It's a portable antenna with two stainless steel 18-foot telescopic poles there with a loading coil as well. It operates 40 meters through 6 meters, and there's also a carry bag and a tripod to go along with it as well. And coax, we'll throw in some RG8X coax and a power supply, an MFJ 4115 portable 12-volt supply, very compact. And you might want a headset. Well, you couldn't do any better than the Heil BM17 portable headset. It's made especially for emergency communications, but it would be great in any portable operation. And it comes with the adapter, or there are adapters available for any radio that you'd like to mate it with. And one other prize, it's the Forrest Mims Engineers Mini Notebooks, courtesy of W5YI, and Master Publishing, the same people who publish the Gordon West Amateur Radio Study Guides. And we've talked about Forrest Mims' books here. We've actually done some projects from some of these before. So if you're interested in that, well, just go to amateurlogic.tv/contest, and you'll get all the details on how to register right there. Well, into smoke and solder for tonight. There are sometimes things don't look like what they actually are, and that's a good thing. And then sometimes you got problems at these transmitter sites as well. So let's just go take a quick look at a Tales from the Transmitter that is some short shots that I shot this past Sunday.
This week on Smoke and Solder, we've got another Tales from the Transmitter. You know, when you're running high power on a transmitter, you need to maintain your transmission line and antenna properly. You should check your transmission line to be sure that you don't have any hot spots. No, that's not what this is. That transmission line is not actually glowing. This apparently was a piece of old transmission line that had previously lived on the side of a tower and been painted orange. This is what we refer to in the broadcast industry as hardline. It's 3 1/8-inch rigid transmission line. You can see those pieces of transmission line are connected into a motorized antenna switch. This switch is used to connect the main and auxiliary transmitters between the antenna and the dummy load. They just reverse positions. It can be controlled remotely, where you can switch the auxiliary transmitter in an emergency. The red items there with the terminals are micro switches that contact a bar that moves whenever the antenna switch position is changed. That is part of the interlock system, because you don't want to be changing the position of an antenna switch while there's power on it. These switches connect to the interlock circuits of the transmitters so that both transmitters will be shut down if that antenna switch moves. The control circuitry of the antenna switch is just two simple three-pole double-throw relays. However, I've had these relays arc shut on a number of occasions, and I've had traces burned off of that PC board that I've had to repair several times. Lightning seems to like that path to ground. For some unexplained reason, whenever this occurs, the motor moves just a little bit, enough to move that little bar on the micro switches to where the switches no longer contact, shutting the transmitters down. At the same time, the circuit breaker throws for the switch, and I'm no longer able to control the switch, which means I'm stuck somewhere between main and auxiliary and can't get on the air. I've tried a number of things to solve this problem, including additional grounding and installing very expensive surge suppressor, installing MOVs on the PC board. So far, no luck. I'm going to try one more thing today. Now, I don't know if this will solve the problem, but eventually I will. Many of you have seen ferrite toroids used for balance, to convert between balanced and unbalanced transmission line and antennas, and transform impedance. A major transmitter company supplies these with new transmitters to be used as lightning protection. You install the toroids around transmission line, power leads, audio connections, control connections, anything connected to the transmitter. I had an extra toroid, so I decided to take a piece of Romex, wrap around it, and we'll put it in the power feeding the antenna switch, see if that helps out. As long as we're here, I thought we might look at a couple other things. That transmission line is hollow. It has an air dielectric. On the other side of the wall, that rigid line connects to a 4-inch heliax. That also has an air dielectric. Most high power stations use air dielectric transmission lines because they'll handle more power and have less loss on long runs.
To keep moisture out of the transmission line and reduce the possibility of a flashover, we add nitrogen or we use a dehydrator to add dry air to the line and keep it pressurized. That way, moisture can't enter the system and create havoc. That is extremely important because a meltdown can cause tens of thousands or more dollars in damage. To constantly monitor the transmission line to be sure the pressure remains on it, I have a pressure sensor connected to the remote control that will call me if the pressure drops below a preset limit. Have you ever wondered what a 25-kilowatt dummy load would look like? This is a 25-kilowatt air-cooled dummy load. It's about as tall as I am. Transmitters require a low-pass filter or harmonic filter on the output. Hanging from the ceiling there, connected to that old Gates, which is now an auxiliary transmitter, is a low-pass filter. The newer Continental transmitter on the right has the harmonic filter built into the cabinet. And that's it for this week's Smoke and Solder and Tales from the Transmitter.
Okay, well, that's how I spent my Sunday, is out there working on that antenna switch. This right here, the first time I saw that, scared me half to death, because even in real life, it looks like that piece of transmission line is glowing red hot. And it was on a tower at some point in its life. And at the bottom, they cut off a piece and there's a flange soldered, or actually welded, along the bottom. And that just kind of, you know, burnt the paint around. And it really looks like, you know, it's ready to burst into flames. But no, I felt of it. No heat there at all. So that's my tale, and I'm sticking with it, Bob.
George, I just want to let everybody know that Don is just doing fine. He escaped all that water, but he's not here tonight, but he'll be here next week. But he's recorded his piece, so let's see what Newsline's got tonight for it. So take it away, Don Wilbanks.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2237, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, September 16th, 2020. While the FCC has not set a date to vote on imposing a $50 charge for a new amateur radio license or renewal, the agency has been accepting public comments about its notice of proposed rulemaking, with a mixed response.
Will Wyquist, the FCC's Associate Director of Media Relations, told Newsline in an email that the FCC is mandated to charge a fee to hams because of changes Congress enacted in 2018. The law is known as the Ray Bombs Act, an acronym for Repack Airwaves, yielding better access for users of modern services. It directly impacts personal licenses such as amateur radio. Opinions thus far in the FCC's electronic comment filing system have included numerous arguments against the fee, saying it would deter young people and keep ham radio out of the reach of retirees and low-income applicants. A Michigan amateur wrote, however, that he considered the proposal reasonable, suggesting a fee waiver for individuals younger than 18. The Valley Amateur Radio Association in Virginia suggested fees of no more than $15 for initial licenses and modifications, and a waiver for operators active in emergency communications and community events. The FCC calls the fees cost-based. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
This event's already passed, but it merits mentioning how a university student is working towards a doctorate, and amateur radio operators got to help.
A balloon experiment launched on Saturday, September 12th by students at the Warsaw University of Technology is carrying important data for one student pursuing a doctoral degree. The balloon has an unusual VLF 210-meter long, fully airborne antenna system which creates an electromagnetic field on 14.2 kilohertz, Listeners in Poland may recall this was once the frequency of the Babici radio station, which played an important wartime role relaying messages to the German submarines in the Atlantic. Radio enthusiasts have been asked to listen for the transmission and provide feedback on signal reception during the three-hour flight, everything from location, signal-to-noise ratio, and bandwidth. Hams will be able to track the balloon via APRS on 144.8 MHz. The balloon's call sign is SP5AXL. From its radio newsline, I'm Ed Durant, DD5LP.
Finally this week, Newsline anchor Jim Dameron, N8TMW, has some exciting news regarding our 2019 Young Ham of the Year recipient.
Newsline takes special joy in announcing that Dhruv Reba, KC9ZJX, our 2019 Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Young Ham of the Year, has been appointed the ARRL Illinois State Section Youth Coordinator. The prominent post is the latest accomplishment the high school student has achieved. Last December, Dhruv was one of two students chosen to receive the I Have a Dream Award for Youth at the 44th Annual Martin Luther King Awards Luncheon. In 2018, he was part of the Dave Calter Youth DX Adventure in Curico. In his role with the ARRL, Dhruv is responsible for promoting on-air activities for youth, including school club roundup and encouraging other youth-related programs and ideas. Dhruv has been a ham since the age of 9. All the best, Dhruv. We couldn't be prouder of you.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Ed Durant, DD5LP, Jim Dameron, N8TMW, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update from Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We have storms to the east of us. We have storms to the west of us. But everything's all clear Earthside. Those stories and more in the news this week. Space weather this week has definitely quieted down compared to last week. As we take a look at our Earth-facing disk, back on the 5th, we did have a bright region in Earth view that fired off a solar storm that went east of Earth, and that got us a little bit excited, thinking maybe this thing was going to do something. And then, before we even got settled, we had another solar storm fired off to the west of us. This was due to the filament channels that we were watching very eagerly last week. It looks like maybe one of them let go and it let up a beautiful solar storm in coronagraphs, but that went west of us. So my goodness, we had storms to the east of us, we had storms to the west of us, and we got super excited. Then when we switched back to that bright region, where did it go? It fizzled on us. So then we kept watching and another bright region began to form in the finger-like coronal hole that we've also been watching. Unfortunately, that region looks like it's also fizzled. So we're just kind of sitting here in a quiet zone, I guess. Meanwhile, that coronal hole is going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here in the next probably day. So we might get a little bit of fast wind from that. But other than that, we've been pretty much sitting at quiet conditions to maybe unsettled conditions. And it looks like the solar flux has also tanked. We actually might be back into the poor range for radio propagation on Earth's dayside. And unfortunately, it looks like it's going to remain that way. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, as we take a look at the X-ray flux, you can see we're back to a very low floor right now. Don't worry about the ups and downs. This is just orbit variation. It just happens to be that season where it looks like the flux is going up and down, but it's not the sun. It just goes going around in its orbit. Meanwhile, you can see the fluxes continue to trend very low. This is because we have no sunspots on the Earth-facing disk, and sadly, we have dropped back into the high 60s for solar flux. So we're dealing with poor radio propagation on Earth's dayside, and we might get a little bit of a reprieve because we do see a bright region in stereo's view, but it's going to take a few days for it to reach Earth view. So we're just going to have to keep dealing with this over the next couple days. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you know, we have to go back to the 28th to see the last time we actually reached storm levels. This was due to that fast solar wind from that coronal hole that rotated through the Earth strike zone that was in the north. It was a really strong coronal hole, and it gave us a decent punch. We brought this up to storm levels on the 28th and then again on the 30th, and it took us until about the 2nd for us to settle down, which meant we had some gorgeous aurora over many parts of the world and all the way down to mid-latitudes, and that was just really fun. It was a nice treat. Meanwhile, we've kind of quieted down and quieted down. We went to unsettled conditions and then down to quiet conditions. Ugh. And we kind of lasted there for a little while, and now we've popped back up to unsettled, and this is pretty much where it's going to stay. We do have that coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone. It's a finger-like coronal hole, so it's kind of a remnant coronal hole. There's not much to it. That could bump us back up to maybe even more unsettled conditions. Doubt it's going to make it to active conditions, but at least it'll give us something at high latitudes. But outside of that, it looks like this is about as good as it's going to get. So what else does our sun have in store for us this week? Well, this is Stereo A. It's our partially far-sighted monitor. You can see here's Earth, here's the sun, and here's Stereo A staring at the sun pretty much from the side. And when you take a look at the disk in Stereo's view, you do see that region down in the south. Now, back on the 5th, this is the region that fired that solar storm that went east of Earth. But since then, it kind of fizzled out. And we were thinking, oh, bummer, that's not going to give us much. And then we started seeing another region begin to build inside that finger-like coronal hole. That was back on the 9th or so, but it's not done all that much either, and we are still sitting in the high 60s for solar flux, and that means poor radio propagation. But since then, as we look past that in Stereo's view, we are seeing a new region in the north that's rotating into Stereo's view, and possibly a new region emerging in the south. And if those regions rotate into Earth view, that might give us enough to boost that solar flux back up into the marginal range. So amateur radio operators and emergency responders, you're just going to have to hang in there for a few more days. Switching to our solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, everything has been pretty quiet, and things at least early part of the week are going to continue that way. Now, we do have that coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth strike zone right about midweek. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting unsettled conditions, but we do have up to about a 15% chance of a minor storm, and actually by midweek, possibly up to about a 30% chance of a minor storm when that fast wind hits Earth. Now, at mid-latitudes, we're also expecting normal to unsettled conditions with up to about a 5% chance of active conditions until that fast wind hits. When it hits, we could be up to about a 25% chance of active conditions. But guaranteed, if there are any aurora chances at mid-latitudes, they're going to be very fleeting. So only if you're a real dedicated aurora chaser should you even bother. Most likely, things are going to be very sporadic and they're going to die out pretty quickly. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything continues to be in the green when it comes to big solar flares. We do have a spotless sun right now, despite the fact that we do have a bright region in Earth view. And this is good news for GPS users. You have no risk for radio blackouts, and therefore GPS reception on Earth's dayside should be pretty top-notch. Sadly, though, it does mean that solar flux has dipped back into the high 60s. We do have poor radio propagation on Earth's dayside, but we do have a couple bright regions that will be rotating into Earth view here over the next maybe 3 or 4 days. So amateur radio operators and emergency responders, hold on, because we might get back into that marginal range here near the end of the week. Now, also, because we are still trying to climb out of solar minimum, the cosmic ray flux is a bit more intense than we'd like it to be. So you frequent flyers, and this does include air crew who fly over 800 hours annually and fly at high latitudes and high altitudes, you are in the moderate range for radiation dose, and this does include prenatal passengers, so please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week is going to remain reasonably quiet. We've had storms to the east of us. We've had storms to the west of us, but we've not had much when it comes to Earth-directed solar storms. And that means conditions will continue to be quiet for quite some time. We do have a small remnant coronal hole that's rotating in through the Earth strike zone, which could bring us some decent aurora views at high latitudes, but only fleeting aurora views at mid-latitudes, possibly around midweek. But only if you're a dedicated aurora photographer at mid-latitude should you even try to pursue this, because it probably won't last all that long. Now, meanwhile, amateur radio operators and emergency responders, you're suffering just a little bit because, yes, solar flux has managed to dump back into the high 60s here at least for the next couple days. But we do have a reprieve because we do have a few bright regions on the sun's far side that will be rotating into Earth view here over the next couple days. And that does mean that solar flux could bump back up into the low 70s and give us some marginal radio propagation. So, you know, just hang in there and maybe the day side will get a little bit better. Now, you GPS users, on the other hand, you should be celebrating. We don't really have any solar storms hitting and the solar flux continues to be low. So GPS reception pretty much all over the globe should be top notch. I'm Tamitha Scove, the Space Weather Woman. Thank you for watching.
Hi, everyone. Sorry, I was still chatting. I'm used to a little bit more of an introduction than that. All right. Oh, boy. So we're talking. I wish Dr. T was on tonight because we definitely want to talk about the new solar cycle 25 starting. George, are you excited about that?
I am. I'm looking forward to it because, ever since I've been licensed, well, as an extra where I could get on HF, really hadn't had the band conditions for it. So I'm looking forward to a good cycle. Fingers crossed anyway.
Absolutely. And Bob, same, right? You're ready for a new cycle to begin.
Well, I hate to say this, but I've never had a problem during all of this. I guess, number one, it could have been the antenna situation in the Ozarks, but I never had any problem at all. I mean, I've had great luck through all of the past 10 years, but it was nothing like it was back when I first got my license. My gosh. And I was on 6 meters for 17 years. The band was open every day. And when I say that, people say, hi, are you full? No, it's true. It was like 75 meters all the time. And it was better other days. And a lot of days the DX was just running wild. And I don't have any problem. And I don't think anybody else should. I think there's always somewhere you can go to make contacts. And you have to have decent antennas and all of that. I do realize that. But I'm really happy. And it's turned out okay here in Belleville. And this is a little not noisier than it was down there. But, hey, look at 70. I can't find a spot on 75. I found that one, but called about a minute or two. Nobody came back. So I guess none of you guys are listening on 75. And 40 meters, I heard two guys in that at one frequency. But there's always things to do. If not, get out your soldering iron and build something, Amanda.
That's right. Try another antenna, if nothing else. I'd like to say about the solar cycles, Jeff worked harder at it than I did. He became licensed in about 2007 when it was a very minimal and tried to get his work to all states. And we lived in an apartment, used a vertical. He fought hard for every contact he ever made. You know, it was always barefoot. And I guess I'm just kind of the lazy operator right now where I don't want to have to turn on power to try to bust through a pileup. I'd rather it just be good conditions and I can just be resonant on my dipole and make the contact work without having to fight too much for that. But then what's the fun in not having to fight to win through a pileup? Gordo, what do you think?
That's right, Amanda. But Bob and I remember back in 59, that's when I first got my license, that 2 meters every day was open to about a 1,500-mile path. 2 meters every day. Hey, this little guy here, this comes from Impulse Electronics. This is the little volt amps, watt hours calculator. And that's from Impulse Electronics. And here's what Roger has at Wired Co. This is that neat little thing that you plug in cell phones and the charger, and it tells you exactly how much current is going into that cell phone. So I finally got those two correct. Back to you, Amanda.
Well, thanks, Gordo. And I want to know who coordinated this evening. Was it George or was it Gordo? The matchup? the same shirt.
Oh, actually, George wins because look at his color. It's much more red than mine. So I'm going to just have to give this one away.
I wore my pineapple t-shirt here to try to fit in.
Yeah. So.
Because I couldn't find mine. It's probably in my closet somewhere, but I couldn't coordinate quick enough. So, oh boy, you guys, speaking of getting on the air and some nuts and things, we're slacking off here in the 20 meter and 40 meter net. Unfortunately, just, you know, things happen and our net controls are not always available. So there's no 20 meter net tonight. And the 40 meter net, Kevin KC7FPF, he always does such a terrific job at doing that. He said, it's too darn hot to go up and fix my A3S right now. And I said, I understand completely. So guess what? I'm going to try to run a 40 meter net right after the show here. So stay tuned. Listen for my voice. I'm going to do a really quick and dirty net. Just take some check-ins and make sure we're all staying active there on 40 meters. And on the other nets, we got the D-Star Knot on 14 Charlie and DMR on 31012. Now I want to talk about one more net. And it's a fun net because a lot of Ham Nation viewers join in on this net. And George, I'm going to let you tell me the name of the net because I'm not exactly sure what you call it for next Tuesday. Go ahead.
Well, it's the Amateurlogic Sound Check net. Now, I don't know why we call it Sound Check, but it's every Tuesday night. And it's basically, and Amanda, you've been there a few weeks now. You kind of know how it goes. It's hosted here on a local repeater, W5PPB, that's W5 Ping Pong Ball, -R, on Echolink. And as a matter of fact, the Echolink node is sitting right up there. I've been running it for a number of years for Jeff, and, you know, it just links into the 145.45 repeater here as well as a 145.39 here. And we've got Echolink on it, so people can connect in, but that's not all. Thanks to Jeff, K8JTK, who runs or is one of the net controls on the Ham Nation D-Star net, and N8PC, Brad, they both have linked systems, or I believe they refer to them as hubs, and they connect in that net as well. So you can connect in with just about anything. You can come in on one of the local repeaters here in the Jackson, Mississippi area. You can connect on Echolink. There's at least two different nodes you can choose there. All-Star, D-Star, System Fusion, WiresX, NXDN, P25, and I probably left out some modes, but it's the only net I know that's that well connected where you've got all those different modes you can check in. And we try to do multiple check-ins for those who've got the hotspots or the radios and are capable. You know, you can check in once, say, analog with Echolink, and then you might check back in with D-Star or Fusion or DMR or Hamshack Hotline. That's on there as well. So we've got people from all over the U.S. and actually from other countries, too. We've got a regular friend of ours that's here in the chat room a lot, 087T, Tame from Finland. And occasionally we've got folks from Australia, you know, over in the U.K., everywhere. And it's always a fun time on Tuesday nights at 8 Central. That would be this time of year, 0100 UTC. So join us over there one Tuesday night. If you're looking for something to do, come test out your radios and your hotspots on the different modes and join in the fun.
All right, George. Well, thank you so much. You don't know this, but VE3MIC and I were talking, and he said that I needed to make sure I made this announcement because evidently there's a hot competition going on between Tommy and George on getting the biggest amount of check-ins. So we threw a monkey wrench in there, and I'm going to run the net next Tuesday, and we're going to see who will knock their socks off. So come join us, and I'll be sure to post it on Facebook and some other things so everybody knows where they can go to check in. And definitely the multiple modes is, it's really fun. I've done it on D-Star, P25, everything here and back, and you get to do several check-ins. And we always have a topic. George and Tommy and Mike always have a topic that they bring up for discussion, and it's really a great time. So, Bob, if we don't hear you, check it in next week.
Well, I'll be around. I'm not sure if I'm here Tuesday. Tuesday night I got a club thing. I'm doing 2 and 3 clubs a week. And if you guys, you're looking for something to do, send me an email. I love coming to your club with Zoom or Skype. And we're getting up towards 100 people in some of these rooms. And it's wonderful because we can share the science of this hobby. And we don't have any problem being shut down for the pandemic. There's a lot of activity out there, as you know. So that's where I think I'm going to be headed. I think it's Tuesday. I have to check again. Almost need a secretary. I'd like to have Sarah do it, but she's too busy taking care of everything else around here. So we're really busy having a lot of fun, though. So I'm going to go charge in and see what's going on Route 66 here later on after about 10:30. I'll be out doing that. But I appreciate everybody coming tonight. And as if you were here earlier, it's a very special day for me because 64 years ago, I started my career in ham radio. And we're very happy that we're still here and we're having a lot of fun and hope sharing some of this excitement with you. So we'll check in next week. I got a really special show next week lined up for you. And I'll just tell you this, there's going to be a lot of activity from up north here. Some gal by the name of Valerie's going to be with us. So all you Val fans, put out the word. She's here next week, right here. And we'll see how we go from there. Thanks a lot, everybody. It's been fun. Work a lot of stations and things are great. If they're not, make them great. Bye-bye for now. This is K9EID.
All right. We'll hear you on the satellite tonight. Make noise and we'll be listening.
Want more TWiT? Well, check out Hands on iOS, twit.tv/HOI, where I teach you all about iPhones, iPads, AirPods, Apple Watches, and so much more. If you want to get the most out of your device, then you got to check out Hands on iOS, twit.tv/HOI.